G'day and welcome to the Bernie Gaynor Show on Good Source. There's a lot going on at the moment, and so we have a lot to get through today. The violence is only increasing in America as the election nears, and it only looks set to worsen. The Australian Defence Force is celebrating We're at Purple Day. Islamic terrorists are being released into the community. And of course, we once again celebrate the Goose of the Week. Who will it be? But first, as always, we start in Victoria. For those of you who do not know Victoria, it is famous for two things. Its close relationship with the communist Chinese regime and its extreme response to COVID-19. Normal people, people who are still sane and can reason, would immediately grasp that those two things are not coincidences. Somehow, and I just can't think why, it seems likely that those two things are linked. If you happen to live in Victoria's capital, Melbourne, you cannot travel more than 5 kilometres from your home, and you cannot go out after 8 p.m. No one really knows what any of this has to do with a disease. Dictator Dan has not bothered to explain it at all. He has just demanded that Melburnians shut up and accept his restrictions. Even the medical authorities have not bothered to explain them, but they have decided that Captain Cook is a problem. Who can forget that Annelies van Diemen tweeted this in April? Sudden arrival of an invader from another land, decimating populations, creating terror, forces the population to make enormous sacrifices and completely change how they live in order to survive. COVID-19 or Cook 1770? Given Annelies van Diemen is factually wrong about Captain Cook and also factually wrong about the impact of COVID-19 as well, it is worth asking why she is providing expert advice to the Victorian government. No one seems to be able to answer that question. And so Melburnians live in a bizarre world where their government has decided that it is safe for them to walk down a street at 7:59 p.m, but it is definitely not safe to walk down the same street 2 minutes later. Do so and you will be treated like a criminal. Do COVID germs come out when it gets dark like little monsters? Are they more active at night? The Victorian government seems to think so. As a result, it locks people up in their homes as the sun sets, as if the problem we face is nocturnal zombie hordes or vampires instead of a disease that is problematic, but not all that bad, and certainly not all that bad here in Australia or even in Victoria. Predictably, these draconian lockdowns are making life difficult to even respond to the coronavirus. I know this because I speak to Victorians. Well, it seems that its premier does not. Nurses who finish their shift after 8 p.m. cannot buy food on the way home, so their mothers have to break the law and travel more than 5 kilometres just to make sure that their daughters, the daughters who are supposed to look after sick people, actually eat, do not wear themselves down, do not get sick themselves, and can do their job. As a matter of fact, the restrictions imposed by Dictator Dan are making things worse, and they will get much worse. Over the past few weeks on this show, I have highlighted the real and devastating tales of woe and misery caused by draconian lockdowns. When the coronavirus is done and dusted, it is far more likely that future generations will talk about their uncle who killed himself because he lost all hope than their grandmother who died in the nursing home of dementia but with COVID-19. And I say died with COVID instead of because of COVID for a reason. Because the stats you are being fed count anyone who died with COVID as a COVID death, even if they died for some other reason. See for yourself. This is Victoria's chief medical officer explaining how it works.
Verifying that the actual cause of death, mortality?
Not necessarily. So for deaths from coronavirus, anyone who's a confirmed case who dies is classified amongst coronavirus deaths. So it doesn't have to be definitively from coronavirus. And in some instances, in aged care, there would have been some residents who were already receiving palliative care who became infected with coronavirus. So it's not definitive about whether they've died with or from coronavirus.
Given the average age of those in Australia who have died with COVID-19 is 86, and the vast majority of those were already in nursing homes, it seems likely that the real toll of this disease is far lower than what most people have been led to believe. But, as a nation, we have given up living in the false hope of avoiding death. It comes anyway, with or without a case of COVID-19. And there is a very high likelihood that we will see more early deaths in the years ahead, not from coronavirus, but from suicide, poverty, or due to reluctance or inability to gain medical care for life-threatening illnesses as a result of the shutdowns. I have been warning of this for weeks, and I will continue to do so. A German study just released has found that during the lockdowns in that country in March and April, there was a 31% decrease in the number of patients treated in hospital for heart attacks and an 18% drop in stroke patients. If these numbers are replicated in Australia, and they may well be, it would mean that approximately 6,800 Australians went without medical care for a stroke and another 9,700 did not receive treatment for a heart attack during March and April. These strokes and heart attacks are deadly, and it is possible that over 15,000 Australians missed out on essential medical care for these deadly diseases in March and April alone. And then there is suicide. The head of Melbourne University, Professor Duncan Maskell, an expert in infectious disease, warned last week that Australia faced the risk of more deaths from suicide and poverty due to coronavirus shutdowns than from the disease itself. As I have repeatedly mentioned on this show, Victoria's own statistics show a massive increase in hospitalisations for self-harm over the past few weeks. So Professor Maskell's warning is not empty rhetoric. And given he is an expert in infectious diseases, his warning also raises another concern. There has simply been no public debate at all about the lockdowns imposed by decree under extraordinary emergency powers, even though it is clear that the experts are divided themselves about the need for the lockdowns and hold grave concerns about their impact on society. Dictator Dan demanded that Victoria's state of emergency be extended for 12 months last week, even though, as pointed out by Nick Cater in The Australian, Victoria's coronavirus crisis is so small that if it was an American state, it would be coming equal last in the rankings for the number of coronavirus cases per capita. In other words, there is simply no need for Dictator Dan to have powers that allow him to lock Victorians up in their own homes. Not now, and not in 12 months' time. Now, he has backed down on that, but he is now demanding a 6-month extension instead and refusing to allow his ministers to be held accountable by Victoria's parliamentary committee system. All of this sounds like the kind of thing you hear from communist regimes. So it is no surprise at all that Dictator Dan is also kicking up a stink because the Commonwealth is concerned that Victoria's secret agreement with China undermines our national interest and sovereignty. And it does. The Victorian Premier has also refused to accept briefings from our national security agencies about Chinese interference or espionage in Australia, claiming that he is too busy dealing with the flu from Wuhan. It is a little ironic. So when we get past this new normal, it won't just be shattered lives caused by coronavirus lockdowns that we need to deal with. Thanks to Daniel Andrews, our national security has been weakened too. Staying on the topic of Chinese influence in Australia, a few weeks ago I raised concerns on this show that China was manipulating or influencing Australia's anti-discrimination industry to further its claim that Australia is a racist nation. It's not hard to see why this could happen. For a start, China issued a travel warning to Australia based on a press release issued by the New South Wales Anti-Discrimination Board. That shows at the very least that the communist Chinese government happily uses this industry to attack Australia and to further its propaganda about our nation. As I mentioned, it's also possible that Chinese agents lodged the complaints in the first place, or 4 of them per week. That's how serious this problem is. 4 complaints a week. That is exactly what the New South Wales Anti-Discrimination Board is worrying itself about. Given there is no detail at all about the complaints, no accountability, no transparency over who lodged them or for what, it is entirely reasonable to have some scepticism about them. For all we know, some bureaucrat in the New South Wales Anti-Discrimination Board could be spending his taxpayer pundit day worrying about people who call the coronavirus the China flu. This week, Andrew Bolt noted that the latest edition of the Australian Journal of Defence and Strategic Studies was warning that China's military build-up will create a much higher threat level over the next 20 years, and that our nation needed to be prepared to deal with sabotage operations conducted here if war does break out. Now, this is a very contentious topic. There are over a million Australians with Chinese ancestry. They are our friends and family members, and the vast majority of them are loyal to this nation. However, the Chinese government openly maintains contact with Chinese nationals overseas and does not hesitate to brutally target their families at home if they do not cooperate. This is clearly an issue of concern and cannot be ignored. China uses the racism card quickly and effectively to stifle debate. That is why it is pleasing to see that Mark Latham has now raised the prospect of Chinese interference in the anti-discrimination industry in New South Wales Parliament. He recently asked if the New South Wales government was aware that Chinese state media had called Australia a racist nation, citing the Anti-Discrimination Board, and for an outline of the measures in place to ensure that the Anti-Discrimination Board is not manipulated by Chinese agents. The response from the New South Wales government is concerning, to say the least. It says that foreign political interference in Australia is a matter for security agencies, and by that it means the Commonwealth, and that it is up to the president of the Anti-Discrimination Board to decide what complaints to decline. In other words, there are no measures in place at all to prevent Chinese manipulation of the anti-discrimination industry in New South Wales, or probably for the other states, for its own propaganda purposes against Australia. The anti-discrimination industry should be shut down for many reasons. Most importantly, because it promotes cultural Marxism and is used to silence political opinions, just like the thought police in communist China. We can now add to that list the likelihood that this taxpayer-funded mob has become a tool for Chinese propaganda against our nation as well. On Friday, it was Wear It Purple Day. It's just one of the increasing numbers of LGBT whatever days that now litter our calendar, and there will never ever be enough of them. Of course, this means that the Defence Force dropped everything to join in this complete waste of time. This is from an email sent out by Sarah Myers. She is the Assistant Secretary, Land Vehicle Systems, but also wears the hat of being Defence Capability Acquisition and Sustainment Group's LGBTI champion. Her email states, "As CASG's LGBTI champion, I encourage you and your teams to show support for Wear It Purple Day. A self-host pack has been developed to assist groups and services celebrate Wear It Purple Day and show support of the LGBT community in CASG and the broader defence environment. Recognition of the day might be as simple as turning your email fonts or background purple, or putting on a favourite pair of purple socks, cap or shirt for the day. The LGBTI intranet webpage can provide you with further information and resources regarding Defence's LGBTI initiatives. Further information can also be found on the Wear It Purple Day website. Looking forward to seeing you all wearing it purple. It's good to get a taxpayer-funded job if you can, and it's also good to know that when it does hit the fan, Australia will be well prepared with purple shirts." As the US election approaches, it is clear that things are beginning to spiral out of control. We should brace ourselves for the likelihood of further and worsening violence and destabilisation, and even the prospect that the US will become paralysed after the election. But first, some context to explain why the current situation is far more volatile than anything seen in recent memory. It is important to understand that the US is not Australia. Mob violence and riots are far more common in America than here. For instance, even under President Obama, there were riots in August 2014 in Ferguson, Missouri, that initially lasted for 2 weeks, then broke out again later in 2014 and a year later in 2015. 321 people were arrested, numerous police officers were injured, and there was widespread looting, vandalism, and arson. There was also widespread rioting and looting during Obama's presidency in Baltimore in 2015 and in Charlotte in 2016. Thankfully, this is something that is simply not seen in Australia. However, since the death of George Floyd, there has been an orchestrated and organised wave of violence across America. Portland has seen 3 months of nightly riots and clashes with police. There have been concerted efforts to burn down the federal courthouse, Protesters have even barricaded police stations shut with people inside and attempted to set them alight. This has been going on now every night for more than 90 days. Have a look. And then the police responds. It is clear that these rioters are organised and prepared. There is simply no way that this could continue for 3 months without planning and logistical support. This militia raises funds. It builds weapons. It trains. It has a media arm. It moves from incident to incident, and it engages in violence. Simply put, what we are watching is an organised and extreme left-wing militia aligned with the radical left of the Democrat Party, at war with the state and with Americans. For 3 months, there has been looting and violence. There has been intimidation in the neighbourhoods. Imagine if this was your street. Imagine if this occurred at your church service. Imagine if this occurred at your restaurant. After a while, if this went on across the nation, you would expect that people would start taking the law into their own hands, especially if the police and state seemed incapable of stopping it. That is what is now occurring. This is footage from a few days ago in Portland where reactionary Americans began to confront these left-wing militias. America has reached this point because state governors have refused to enforce the law. And, unsurprisingly and very sadly, it has turned deadly. A few days ago, a 17-year-old turned up at a protest with an assault rifle. He was not alone, there were others with him who also carried arms. He turned up, it claims, to help and protect people and to save property. It seems clear that whatever his intentions, this was a recipe for disaster. No sane parent would want their 17-year-old son to be in this position. Yet this is what he was confronted with. Shortly after this 17-year-old boy was chased, tripped, and fell. He was then violently assaulted. He turned and fired his rifle. He has now been arrested for murder. Two people are dead, including the man you just saw in this video, taunting this boy and others.
Oh shit.
This chaos is happening all over America. It is helping no one. It is only ending and ruining lives. To make matters worse, fuel is being thrown onto the fire by Democrat politicians who are setting the groundwork for this year's election results to be rejected. Hillary Clinton has told Joe Biden not to concede defeat under any circumstances, even if he loses the election.
Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances because I think this is going to drag out, and eventually I do believe he will win if we don't give an inch.
And now former Vice President Al Gore is the latest to claim that the military might be needed to remove President Trump from office. All of this violence and the political rhetoric with it points to the likelihood that whatever the result of the election, it will end up in court, paralyzing the United States for who knows how long. This will have dramatic implications for world stability and will no doubt see further bloodshed on American streets. We will feel the effects here. And right now, it seems that unless there is a miracle, all of this is inevitable. Last week, I mentioned a secret trial currently underway in the Australian Capital Territory. I cannot tell you the name of the complainant, I cannot tell you the name of the defendant, and I cannot tell you anything at all about the complaints. This should worry all Australians. The last thing we need is for gay activists to gain the power to drag people into Canberra for a secret trial for their views on marriage, family, or morality. I will let you know that work is underway to address this situation, and I will bring you updates when I can. Bilal Khazal is a name that you probably will not be familiar with. He has been rotting in Goulburn Jail for the past 12 years after writing a 110-page terrorism manual and training with the Taliban. But he is free today, even though he has not given up his extreme and dangerous ideas. While he was in prison, he continued to promote them to other prisoners. It is true that he opposes the Islamic State, but that is not really a good thing. He is not against the Islamic State in any meaningful way. Instead, he just thinks that Al-Qaeda's model for the world is more preferable. There are a number of Islamic terrorists who have been released from prison or who will shortly be on the streets again in Australia. After that, it is only a matter of time before we see an increase in Islamic terrorism in this nation. This issue has not gone away. It has just been put on the back burner while the Islamic community recovers from its losses since the Islamic State flared in Iraq. And we should all remember that this community had more of its sons fighting for the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria than in the Australian Defence Force. That is a fact. The majority of Australia's hotheads died over in Iraq or Syria or wound up arrested. But they will rebuild and we will suffer for it. It's time, Goose of the Week. This week's winner is Jordan Steele John, the Green Senator from Western Australia. Fittingly, he wins his award for his performance on the ABC's Q&A program last Monday. Last Monday, he attacked the government's policy of allowing people to access their superannuation, which, let's face it, actually belongs to them, as letting down young people. Young people, I suppose, who might just want to pay off their mortgage instead of handing over their hard-earned wages to union officials. Steele John told the cheering Q&A audience, "To be blunt with you, the male, pale and painfully stale monopoly on power needs to be broken. It is failing our generation," he whinged. Now, that's a little rich coming from a man who is white and sits in the Senate. Jordan Steele John is up there with the best of them. Give him a round of applause. Stay tuned to The Good Source. Tomorrow, Kareem Barraclough brings a heart-wrenching tale about a father and his battle to see his son. Now, if you enjoy what The Good Source brings you, help us to fight fake news. We can only do it with your support. Please subscribe. Please, if you can, donate to keep Good Source going. And make sure that you sign up to get our regular email updates. And if you want to follow me, please do so on Twitter at Bernard Gaynor.
The Bernard Gaynor Show is a production of The Good Source, hosted by Bernard Gaynor. To watch, listen to, or read more content without the SJW PC fact filter, visit goodsource.news, good, S-A-U-C-E, dot news. Become a Good Source supporter for exclusive access to live and unedited interview recordings, including the conversations before and after the show.